Hello and welcome to Old Ass Movie Reviews. I'm Dave. That's Scott. And today we're reviewing The Roaring Twenties with James Cagney, Humphrey Bogart,
yeah,
plethora of other actors and actresses.
Oh, we'll yes.
Get into momentarily. I know what I think about this movie. I was saying earlier that I used to watch this stuff as a kid growing up. They were on,
right?
Seems like all the time, like looking back at it. They were on The Late Show. They were, you know, Gangster Week on the 4 o'clock movie, something like yeah. that. They were always on UHF channels, VHF channels. And you had said that you really watched a lot.
No, I didn't. Up until recently, I was kind of a snob when it came to old movies. I never gave him a chance. So I was just like, right. Oh, I don't want to watch that old ass shit. You know, here we are on old ass movie reviews. I don't want to watch that old ass shit. It's black and white. They can't even be bothered to be in color, man. Them weak bitches, you know, that kind of shit. So it's like, I would stay away from it. But when you and I started talking movies and you started turning me on to movies that are good, it's like, okay, Dave's on to something here. And we start digging into these old
right.
flicks that you grew up watching. I'm discovering them for the first time. I'm discovering actors for the first time.
I find it amazing.
Yeah, I know, right?
I really do. I find it amazing.
And it's wonderful. I am seeing such great cinematography, great acting. Yeah. Great storytelling, directing, sound design, set design, special right. effects. There is some amazing stuff in cinema, but nothing prepared me for the amount of stuff that I have run across in some of these movies
mm-hmm.
that surprised me, like strong women, gay yeah. characters,
yeah,
colored people of color in different positions that you wouldn't right. normally see. It's almost as if we're being lied to on a lot of stuff, right?
So Hollywood would never lie. Yeah,
so watching these movies is enlightening in a lot of ways. It also makes you think about things the way they are today and back then right. and what. So it gets you on another track. But that really is a side product of watching an old movie like this.
Mm-hmm.
But I enjoyed these films. Cagney is a phenomenal actor. We've talked about that over and over, how he's effortless. And
yeah.
it's...
Yeah. When you see him, you're just like, this guy, he's not even acting. He's just walking on and he's just saying the lines. And it's like you said, effortless.
He's the character instantly. Yeah. I don't even question it. And it's like, wow, I want to be able to do that. And that he, has such a huge catalog of mm-hmm. of stuff. So he worked a lot. So I mean, he was constantly working and training and everything. And it shows. Yeah.
Yeah.
Phenomenal.
He was absolutely phenomenal. You had mentioned Bogey. I texted you about.
Bogey. Yes.
And you said you. It's strange to see Bogey as a bad guy.
I thought it was strange because.
Yeah.
My experience with Bogey is we did Casablanca, Maltese Falcon,
right.
Sabrina. So he's not a bad guy in any of those movies. I mean, you could argue Casablanca, but not really. But seeing him as he's not likable in this movie. No. So props to Bogey. He plays the character well. Yeah. And it's really cool because you see Cagney and his relationship. It starts at the very beginning of the movie, World War I, right in a foxhole. There's something about these opening war scenes, this opening act, that really shows the characters, because you have the Lloyd, is it the lawyer?
Yeah. You have James Cagney as Eddie Bartlett. You have
Eddie Bartlett,
Bogart as George Haley. And then you have Jeffrey Lynn is kind of the nice Harvard guy back in the day.
He is. Dude, that scene where they're taking cover in a building
mm-hmm.
and Lloyd has his bead on a, I'm assuming a German soldier.
Yeah.
And he says, oh, he could only be about 15. They switch the camera to Bogey. He fires the shot. Well, he won't see 16.
Yeah.
And it's like, and then the war ends right then. And it's like, that showed me everything I needed to know about his character in that one scene. And it's like, wow.
And especially that he didn't look back and go, oh, shit.
Nope. He was fine with it. He was cold, man.
Didn't care.
He only cared about himself, and that shows throughout the movie, especially when they reunite.
Yeah, that guy was a scumbag.
Oh, he was.
I also mentioned Priscilla Lane.
Yes.
Who is Jane Sherman. She was in Arsenic of the Old Lace.
Yes.
She is the bride in that.
Now, do you know if in this particular movie, is that her vocals or was that somebody else?
I don't know. I asked Kat if she knew. This is the amazing thing that they could do back then. If it isn't her doing the vocals, they got a match that was dumbfounding.
Mm-hmm. It's so well done.
This was the studio back then. So chances are, because you went to vocal classes, you went to dance class, you went to you know, sword play, even if you were, you know, just in case they wanted Cagney to be a swashbuckler, I'm sure he was getting, you know, sword lessons and stuff and riding lessons and anything else. So there's a really good chance that Priscilla Lane actually sang those songs.
I pulled out my phone so I could Shazam it to see if that was who actually was singing it. And it did bring up a soundtrack from a composer of this. So I didn't dig any deeper. So it seemed like it might've just been a studio vocals and which means it very well could have been her. But yeah, very, very well done. Neat characters in this. We talked about Bogey as the jerk and okay. So let's just set this movie up. Starts off World War One. It ends. Here you have all the soldiers, and we're talking a ton coming back who went and gave and did for their country what was needed.
Yeah.
And their backs were turned on them when they came home and needed a job.
Real quick.
Yeah, real quick. And damn, it repeats.
Made, all broken.
Happens every damn time. So it's. Yeah, so he's struggling. He's a go-getter. He wants to do anything, but everything's just slapping him down. So what's he do? Yeah. He goes to crime, and it's
that was completely by accident.
By accident, dude.
He literally stumbles into it by accident. It's like, oh man.
Yeah,
all he had to do is if he'd have quit early, he'd have been okay.
Yeah. So to set it up, folks,
lawyer friend Jeffrey Lynn, who played Lloyd Hart, listen to Lloyd, he'd got out of there.
Well, Lloyd continued to be the soft, good hearted, decent character. He was the moral compass of the group.
And he always saw the good in Cagney's character.
He did.
Because Cagney helped him, Cagney saved him, Cagney brought him on.
They were friends. He would have never done anything to Lloyd.
And that's what's funny. The character of Eddie Bartlett, who Cagney plays, even towards the end, there's a lot of action that happens, a lot of play where you're looking at this stuff and you really have to think about Prohibition, what a money making deal it was for the government, i.e., senators and congressmen, state senators, state representatives, judges. Because they were all getting paid off, just with the drug cartels now. They're all getting paid off. There's not very good people out there right now. I would say the majority, not all of them. I'll take that back, not all. But a great, great majority of them, in my opinion, if you just look at the news and watch. Just like with Prohibition. And Prohibition put so many people out of work. You shut down the refineries,
distilleries, the breweries,
shut down the breweries. And you're not just shutting down those buildings with those people working there. You're shutting down all the ancillary businesses,
the distribution,
the farmers everything. That were growing the hops and the wheat, the truckers, the people who are building the barrels. I mean, this list goes on and on and how many people just this one extremely freaking stupid law affected in a super negative way. And then the criminal stepped in. And to top it off, I lived in Michigan. I could literally sit on the Detroit River, look across the water at Canada, drive over a bridge to go to Canada. And back then, you could take a boat over to Canada. Guess what you could do in Canada during Prohibition in this country? You could drink. Guess what got shipped over from Canada into this country?
Mm-hmm.
Booze.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and not to mention Mexico and Cuba at the time, they could all get booze. What do you think was coming up through the Keys? Booze.
It's so frustrating.
Booze.
It's a really frustrating time in our history that shit like that happens, and it just continues to repeat itself. And it's like, come on, will you, you know? Anyway, I don't want to turn it into a completely political discussion, but it is the politics of the time and continues, and it is relative to it.
Movie too. So yes, for me to bring that up, it's like you have to look at it and go, this
you absolutely
happened.
Do.
This is just
and
bad.
That's what I'm saying. It still happens. I'm just trying to prevent myself from going on a long rant.
No, okay, I get it. No, I agree. All right.
No, but this movie does show what happens when something so unpopular is put forth, and people are all of a sudden told they can't drink, and the criminal elements come up, and you have the whole, you see, they show the corruptness all the way through to the judges, to the cops and everything. One of my favorite characters in this movie is Panama. Is it Panama Smith? Is
Panama that? Smith, yeah. The lady.
Yeah. She is great.
So bad for her through this movie, though.
Oh,
she's a great character.
She was so in love with Eddie. They show it from the very beginning. I wish she would have said it.
Came out and said it. She never came out and said it. It's like, if you would have just said it,
right?
Maybe something else would have happened. You know, I don't know.
Okay, and you know, it's
and that's a good script. That is such a good script.
It's a good script.
Frustrated with the character, and it's not a stupid reason. Like the reason she doesn't do it. Isn't dumb. It's not
because
like
she loves him.
Yeah.
It's really cool. Cause so Eddie receives mail from this girl who looks much older than she really is. I saw this coming a mile away with the way his mom, her mom was talking to, and religion and everything. It's like, my, what is going to happen here? I was like, she's going to be a little schoolgirl coming home. Sure enough, it was a picture from her school play where she was made up to look much older.
Yeah.
And Cagney, he does the right thing to an extent.
His friend is laughing at him. His friend standing behind the girl, just looking at him like,
I wish Eddie would have stayed and just been, you know,
I think it was a
but I know thing. Why he ran. It really threw him off. He thought it was an older one. He was looking for a hookup, and I don't blame him.
I'm thinking he must have been. I'm sorry, go.
Yeah.
How old do you think he was coming home from the war? How old do you think he was supposed to be?
Probably early 20s.
See, I was thinking 19 or 20.
Yeah.
So he meets a 16-year-old girl. I don't know how it was back then, but he was uncomfortable with it, and he was just not going to have it.
About that?
He was just like, ah.
Yeah. And I felt bad for her because, you know, he could have been a cool moment that could have developed, but they needed this. They needed to
work out the way it worked out.
It had to work the way it did. There was no way that relationship was ever going to be. So it was a bit of comedic, comic relief. And this movie has quite a bit of comedy up to the last act.
Yeah, it does. Right up until the character Danny gets it. And Danny's played by an actor named Frank McHugh that I've seen in a lot of, again,
he was so good
actor I've seen him in a lot of things. And he is Cagney's best friend in this movie. Mm-hmm. He's a guy who he basically seems like he grew up with him. He knew him from the neighborhood. And it's you see this coming, what's going to happen to Danny from a mile away.
You knew it.
Yeah.
It comes close a couple times. You're like, is this it? Is this it?
And then you're like, oh, thank goodness. Oh, say he's going to make it. No,
Danny don't make it.
Danny don't make it, folks. That should be the name of a movie. Danny don't make it.
There's something I was thinking. I think it's when he goes after George. Right. And he kicks the dude right off the balcony.
Do you?
Yeah. You like the jokes or laugh. You're laughing. Who's laughing now? Or go laugh at this. I forget what he says. Off. Yeah. And kicks him over the balcony. He's like, damn, dude.
He's done. By that point, he knows he's a dead man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cagney's character knows he's a dead man. But I want to give this movie to you really quick.
Yeah.
Cagney, Bogey, and Jeffrey Lynn, all meet in a foxhole. They come out of the World War One. The two become gangsters. Cagney and Bogey both become gangsters. Yeah. Lynn, still a lawyer, doesn't like Bogey's character named Eddie.
No, Eddie is Cagney.
George, I'm sorry. George is a real jerk. Lloyd Hart is the lawyer guy. He's
the Boy Scout.
Yeah, he's the Boy Scout. He's a good guy. He and Cagney are still friends even after mm-hmm. the war. Cagney brings him into his gangster business.
Yeah, he's their lawyer.
he keeps telling Cagney, he's like, you know, you have enough cabs. You can keep buying all these cabs.
You could just do that.
You could just open up a cab company. You could be the biggest cab, basically telling him, you could be the biggest cab company in New York.
He had thousands of cars. Movie.
Yeah.
Thousands of cars.
But he didn't want that. He thought he was going to make more money being a gangster. And he probably was. Probably was making more money as a gangster in the short.
He didn't have to pay any taxes.
Yeah. So. Which is always a good thing. Let's face it. That's why most people do it. But the guy's honest. He likes Cagney. He knows Cagney's doing dirty. And he's like, yeah, he keeps trying to pull him out.
Yeah, he's trying.
Cagney's still in love with Jean Sherman, who is played by Priscilla Lane. Brings her to the club. She becomes a singer because they've hooked up again. He's trying to get her to be a big star. And she likes Cagney, but she's not in love with him. Cagney's character is in love with her.
And he can't see that she's not.
Yeah, she just likes him. She meets Lloyd Hart. And the two of them, I mean,
oh, you see it right away, man. It's right like, away. Wow. Yeah, it was great acting.
Yeah, really good acting. And those two just fall in love. And the character of Panama Smith is telling Cagney, like, look, those two are in love and you don't see it. You, for whatever mm-hmm. reason, Cagney's all mad. He's like, oh, they wouldn't betray me. And I think at one point Panama Smith is like, it's not a matter of betraying you. It's they're in love and she's not in love with you and he doesn't want to hear it. That right there, Panama should have told him, like, look, I know, you and that I are one and the same. We could do this together.
Their relationship, I really liked. Panama's a great character and they just had good chemistry there. And I'm going to face it. Panama is who I'd go have a drink with. What a classy character as a digger.
She was another one. She had a good heart. You know, mm-hmm. she's a gangster, but she's like, she's a gangster you would do business with too. You know mm-hmm. what I mean?
That's why her and Eddie were very similar.
Yeah. And then Bogey comes in. Him and Bogey hook up while they're trying to steal all the booze off of Bogey's ship. And they decide they're going to double cross the guy Bogey works for. So long story short, everybody's double crossing everybody through this whole movie. The Great Depression hits. Cagney loses everything, which, again, I don't know how, because the Great Depression was a real big boom for gangsters and prohibition.
Yeah, he was still running booze.
I don't know how he. Oh, no, you lost all your money in the stock market. Well, no. I don't know any gangsters that lost all their money in the stock market. Maybe it's just me, but for the story, they had to have Cagney lose everything. And
for the story, it works. If you start picking it apart, we can't figure out exactly how he went broke.
Right. Yeah. Because it's to me, it doesn't make any sense of everything that I know about Prohibition and Prohibition era gangsters. You didn't see Lucky Luciano losing his money. You know, you didn't see Garbano. Lose all their money, you know. Those crime, they lose their money.
But
Scarface didn't lose his money.
Yeah, one of the things, though, that came out of the Prohibition period is it gave us NASCAR.
Yeah, it did, didn't it?
It well, did.
What are you boys going to do now that you can't run liquor?
Stock car well, racing.
We yeah. got a big old track over here. We're going to drive around in circles. All right.
Awesome. And so I always I love the I'm not a NASCAR fan, but I always love the origin of that. Yeah. It all came from bootlegging and it's really cool.
What to talk about that for just a second. I used to watch NASCAR. It wasn't called NASCAR. It was just freaking stock car racing.
Right.
I watched it before it became the big NASCAR and all the cars looked the exact same. I watched it when you had different model cars still mm-hmm. racing on the track in different engines and
Yeah, true stock car racing.
Yeah, real stock cars. I mean, these guys were actually working on their cars. So it's like, okay, you're not making any sense here with why all the cars look the exact same. And what is it? Who has the most gas in their car at some point? I don't know.
Who has the most sponsors? I don't know. It's, I'm sure it's exciting, but hey, it's a cool origin.
Hold on just a second. I'm going to let the dog out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah,
I just remember when everybody's like, I couldn't tell you any names from that time period.
Nah,
that's what I remember.
But that was just kind of a cool little side note. Yeah. As you see that the production of this movie is really cool. There's a lot done on stage, sound stage, on sets and stuff. But there's a lot of cars in this. There's a lot of shootouts. Dude, this is a good gangster movie. This is entertaining to this day.
Did you catch any of the reused footage from Public Enemy?
No, but I did notice near the beginning, it looked like a lot of stock footage of stuff that I was seeing in the intro.
There is a little bit of stock footage, but there's a scene, there's a couple of scenes about a drive-by shooting. And another one was the building, the front of the building blowing out.
Uh-huh.
It's just a different angle from Public Enemy. Same drive-by shooting, but they must have had multiple cameras set up at the time to try and decide which one to use. Because as they were doing it, I was like, what the hell? Did I just see what I think I saw? And then looking through some notes, they did reuse some of the footage.
They pulled a Michael Bay before Michael Bay.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. That's cool.
We already shot it.
Hey, you got the footage. Why does it look the same in these two movies? What the hell?
Yeah, but it was funny because it was a different angle. And I was like, at least they used a different
angle. Might as well use it. I mean, I didn't catch it. But that's cool.
I like that. I feel bad for Panama Smith. But Kenny is down. Man, he's so down on his luck. He's become a taxi driver. It's sad.
He's drunk.
He's a drunk now.
Oh, stop. Let's talk about that a second. Mm-hmm. They made a point to show he didn't even drink.
Yeah. He didn't drink until the girl left him.
And that was it.
Panama should have never let him drink.
Nope.
But then again, he's a big boy. So what are you going to do?
He's a big boy. Yeah. He got his heart broken. Couldn't handle it. That was one tough motherfucker. And the one thing that took him out was
booze.
Was a booze and
a broad.
The love booze he wasn't going to get. Yeah. If he wouldn't have went to the booze, he would have handled his shit better.
Yeah.
So
he would have been fine. I think that would have been, but see, that's the good thing. That's when you know you have really good writing. When you and I can sit here and look at that character and go, oh, if only he wouldn't have drunk.
Yeah.
If he wouldn't have started hitting the booze, Panama would have been able to help him. They would have had kids. They would have been living off in the country probably, or he would have started his own taxi company, something,
I think you and I both would have loved to have seen a happy ending with, he in Panama, but
yeah, but let me tell you,
it to be.
He when the ex-girlfriend Sherman comes to him and asks him for his help, and he's like, no, I'm not gonna do it. He's half in the bag. And Panama Smith looks over at him and goes, you're the only person. She's already jealous of this girl. You know, mm-hmm. she's already jealous of her, but she knows this is the only guy who could possibly go to Bogey's character and either scare him enough or maybe help him. And he goes to Bogey and says, hey, man, maybe you should lay off this district attorney.
This is alleged friend, but man, yeah. Bogey.
And, well, he already knew that Bogey was a piece of shit.
Yeah.
He should have known. If he wasn't drunk, he would have known that going in. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, but being half in the bag at the time and Bogey just being a double crossing little worm that he is, says, no, I'm not going to, you know, I'm going to kill this guy. And he tells him, he says, look, you kill this guy, you're just going to get more guys on you. You know, you should just let it go. Let him do whatever he's going to do. And Bogey turns around and says, well, the guys are going to take you for a drive.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh, it's dawning on him. Oh, okay. You're going to kill me because you think I'm going to roll over. And yep. Bogey tells him, like, you're just going to go run out of here and you're going to run to your pal. And I'm sitting there thinking, no, that's not his character. And Bogey should have known that by now.
But Bogey was paranoid.
Everybody's double crossing him mm-hmm. because his character is double crossing everybody.
Yep.
So,
because he knows he's a double crosser. Everybody else should be. So, yeah, that's
Cagney fashion. Oh, did you recognize the guy that Cagney fought and took the gun from and shot or pushed down the stairs and shot?
No.
Kiss Girl Friday.
Immigrant.
Stupid immigrant.
Oh, shit.
He's the guy. He's the guy that, okay. What's his name, is badmouthed, but he's his little henchman.
Yes. Oh, yes. 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 Because I was looking at him the whole time. It's like, that guy looks so damn familiar. Yes. Because he's got a very distinct face.
When he kicks him out the door and he slams the door and he's a stupid immigrant, he walks away. It's like, dude, this guy just got beat up by a 90-year-old woman. And you're calling him names.
Yeah,
but that's the guy. That's
sure is.
I told you I've seen that guy in a bunch of movies. You always play that kind of character. That's another character.
Yeah, he has the look.
But he takes the gun from the guy, and Bogey gives that freaking great performance. Like, you know he's going to lie. You know he's lying and cheating. You know the first chance he gets is going to kill you. But he's terrified because he knows Cagney's going to
see it. He see it in his Cagney's eyes, man. Like, yeah, he knows he's dead.
You just tried to kill me? I don't think so. Not today. What, three shots? Two shots?
Yeah.
Two or three shots to the guy? But they counted. I counted the bullets because I was like, okay, one, two, three. I was like, they're going to go with, like, he's going to have 8 shots, 10 shots.
No, he didn't.
No, they didn't. These guys, they knew their shit because I've watched old movies.
I was counting as well, man. I was like, all right, let's see.
Shots, and you're like, come on, it's not a clip.
It's nothing is as bad as I think is Charles Bronson in one of the Death Wishes, where he's on the street corner with this huge machine gun and the belt of bullets, and you see it actually go in and he's still firing, but the belt is already gone. The ammo's gone. He just is like, okay.
That had to be one of the last ones. Those guys just
I don't remember. I'm pretty sure it was a Death Wish. I could be wrong, but it was some 80s movie. Yeah,
but sounds about right. That scene, that's where he comes out. He shoots the guy, has the one guy with the arm behind his back. He's got it like tucked up where he's going to break that guy's arm. He walks out, and the gangsters are coming upstairs because they think Bartlett got killed.
They're like, oh, yeah, they heard the shots.
Must have talked too much shit. And that's where the guy gets kicked over.
Yes, that's great.
The railing. Such a good, that's a good stunt too. That's a
yeah. Holy crap. There was some, oh man, I wouldn't want him been doing stunts at this time frame.
You were a ton. You talk about being a stunt man.
Yeah. I would think you might make it.
What am I going to land on exactly? The floor.
That cardboard box.
Yeah. We're going to get Buster.
There's air Keaton. In it.
We're going to get Buster Keaton. We're going to have him show you how to do a pratfall. All right. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Are you sure? I feel like I should be worrying. No, you're fine. You're fine. It's all good. He shoots a couple of guys. He's almost out of the house, man. He's almost down the road. And the one guy gets him. Then gets him again. And then the cops are pulling up. Somebody must have called those cops. And I'm thinking, you know, the girl got back and told her husband what was going on. And I think they don't make it clear, but I think that's probably what happened.
Yeah, they showed up pretty quickly.
So they must have already been on their way. And you feel bad for Panama. I mean, she's just so in love with this guy. But I texted you, in my opinion, this is probably the second best Cagney death scene ever. Ever. First being White Heat. We're going to have to watch that one day. Not now. We'll let some time pass. But in this one, when he's shot, and he's tumbling. He's stumbling. He goes up the stairs of the church, and he falls against the sign. And he tries to take a couple more steps. He's trying to get into the church, it looks like. And then he just starts falling down the stairs. And I'm like, holy crap. I was actually starting
to very symbolic, like, oh, man.
Oh, man. That's
yeah.
So good.
That scene said a lot, yeah.
The pietà, whenever she's holding him in her hands and he's dying in her lap. Like, oh, man. That is good, good. That's
the shot. This is a brilliant movie, man. This is good. This is damn good. I enjoy the hell out of it. And here's the thing. We're watching these old movies. There's something missing. A lot of gratuity, a lot of sex, a lot of gore, a lot of over the top violence. We get it. Things are violent. Yeah. Everything in this movie happens off screen for the most part. And I'm starting to appreciate that more and more because they're being creative. They're like, okay, we can't show this due to either budgetary or censor reasons. Right. We can't show this. How do we make you feel that? And I think it makes a somebody be more creative in trying to do something. And it just comes out better, man.
The two scenes that really stand out for this movie for me, like that you're talking about. Mm. I don't know if these are specifically what you're talking about, but yes, it fits perfectly. When Bogey kills the guard that he knew was the sergeant.
Oh, yeah. Dude.
All you see is Bogey shooting him and the expression on Bogey's face, like he's taking pleasure in this.
Oh, yeah. Because, well, you know, the asshole had it coming, but that was stupid. That showed how unhinged Bogey was.
Right there, I think if I were in that position, I would have shot Bogey. I'd have left his dead ass there.
And then got away.
And then got away. I'd have been like, I'm clearing my shit. Bang, bang. You know, even. Sorry, boss. Gotta go.
I think he was surprised. I think Cagney was surprised at that.
The second one is when Cagney's shooting Bogey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, never see it.
It's the same expression. Once he's doing it for the girl, for the kid, and for his friend. Mm-hmm. And the expression on his face is like, I know I'm a dead man, but you ain't walking out of this room alive. And it's the upshot because it's a slight upshot angle at Cagney. While he's looking down and you see Bogey get shot and fall. And he's like, no, no, no. And he's like, and then the shot goes to Cagney and he puts two more slugs into him. And you're like, oh shit. There's no way. That's like in Rogue One. Nobody's getting off that planet alive. He knows he's not getting out of there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He just knows.
If this was done today on some streaming channel, we would have seen Bogey's brains splatter across the screen. Yeah. There'd be blood drenched and everything. And it's just, I don't know. You know, I don't know what it is about. I don't know. Let the audience see it in their head. Yeah. I don't know. It works. It works well, man.
I wouldn't mind, like, if you get shot and you see the blood.
Right. Absolutely. You know, absolutely.
Like, oh, okay. But it doesn't have to be. I think that's another reason I don't like the movie Scarface. Was Al Pacino anymore?
Lord.
When I first saw it, I loved it. I was like, oh, this is the greatest freaking movie. And I watched it a few years ago, or I tried to. I couldn't even make it through the whole movie. I was like, this is a terrible movie. And I have people look at me and want to argue with me. I'm like, you can argue all you want.
Do you? It's a terrible movie.
from a movie perspective, this is a terrible movie. I don't know how Pacino did it.
I'm not a fan, and I'm a Pacino fan, and this is relevant to the conversation. This gangster movies. I guarantee you, Pacino watched Cagney. Yeah, but yeah, if you're talking Scarface, that's that whole opening scene with the guy in the bathtub and a chainsaw.
As a kid,
I thought, "Oh, this is awesome!" And it's like now, it's like really.
Yeah, really? And then the thing is, you know the Colombians did that shit. They still do.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Yeah. You don't have to show it. You don't have to show it.
No, and before folks say, hey, you're a hypocrite because you've starred in extreme gore films. True. But I'm not making it.
I am a hypocrite.
I didn't make it. And, you know, people love that. And I love seeing how it's done. And it's a lot of fun. But I don't usually partake in watching the stuff that I partake in. It's kind of weird.
Which is odd.
Anyway, just to confuse you, yes, I guess I am a hypocrite. So anyway.
No, it makes sense because you enjoy doing the movies. You know, you enjoy the craft. You enjoy the
stuff. I just don't care to see.
Ability to do it.
Other than the, oh, wow, that was really awesome. How was it done?
Yeah.
So that's how I look at it.
I know people that were all about that in the horror movies back in the 80s. They're just like, oh, my God, this is fantastic. And I'd always be like, why do you see that? I don't get it. But these movies don't have a lot of gore. Like you said, they leave it to your head, like how much violence has just happened off screen. And
there's a lot in this movie.
Yeah, my imagination is a lot more than anything they could have filmed back in the
30s
and 40s, you know? So, yeah, nobody dies on camera like Cagney, man.
Oh, no, no. Nobody. That was such a symbolic scene. And when you mentioned it, I finally started putting the pieces together of him going up the stairs to the church. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, my first thought when I saw that was, a church? That's interesting. Choice. And then I let it go, and then he gets to almost the top and then falls down. It's a whole symbolic of his life, his soul, heart. His journey, everything about that. And it's just such a well done movie. That's my take, folks. I wholeheartedly say watch this damn thing. It is good.
It is fantastic. It's well acted. Well set. Piece
Everything.
Designs are great. Dude. Cinematography is it's very good for the time, especially. Mm-hmm. They didn't do a lot with camera work. They didn't do a lot of fancy stuff until after Citizen Kane came out, when that guy just went nuts with the camera. Like, what if we bring this through here? And, you know, did it. And then
there were some times that I doubt it was this way because it would have been so heavy, but maybe so. Sometimes it almost felt handheld in a few spots.
You know what? I don't know.
But it felt that way.
But those upshots, and the funny thing is, I don't want to say funny because that's not quite the right word, but the upshots weren't like drastic. They were just enough to make you feel uneasy.
Mm-hmm.
Like when they were doing
an anger shot
or the shootouts, and they were doing them from different angles. It was like, man, if they would have tilted that back just a little bit more, you would have been like blown out of your seat. But it was just enough to make you feel uneasy.
That's calculated.
Something was going on.
It's calculated. The cinematographer knew their shit.
Yeah, really well done.
That's what's amazing. Film hasn't been going on that long by this time.
No. No, not at all.
And these guys are knocking it out of the park right off the bat. It's pretty wild.
Fucking
pretty
amazing.
Wild. It is amazing. A lot of talent.
Other stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Can we get back to it? Yes.
You say yes.
I say yes. Watch it. You know what else I say? If you like hearing Dave and I ramble about old ass movies and just old ass shit, hit the share. Yeah. Like, share, subscribe, tell a friend, telegram, tell a mom, I don't know.
Telegram.
And whatever. And we will see you next week with more old ass movies. Thanks again, folks, and catch you later.
Cheers, folks. Take it easy.